desire y'all's prayers this morning. It's a beautiful morning, wonderful day. I don't know about you all, the cooler weather really suits me right now. So what I wrote on the board was, our work, our wages. How many of you all that have ever worked hit the end of your work week or whatever period where you knew the next day you were supposed to get paid and you didn't have anticipation for that date? Has anyone ever hit payday and thought, really don't need it, boss man can keep it? I know here on earth, most everybody I've ever been around, payday comes around, and they're looking forward to it. I've done some labor, I've put in some work, and now I'm going to get something for my effort. So I'd like to kind of have that as a backdrop as we start looking into the scripture. We're going to start off in John chapter 4. John chapter 4, starting in verse 35. Now this is Jesus speaking. He says, "Say not ye, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes, and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. And he that reapeth receiveth wages, and gathereth fruit into life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one soweth and another reapeth. I sent you to reap that whereon you bestowed no labor. Other men labored, and ye are entered into their labors." So what I want us to notice here is, one, there are wages associated with what the Lord wants us to do. He's called it out. Now, it is not wages where you're going to see a direct deposit form and you're going to get it into your bank on Fridays or Mondays or the 1st and the 15th or however that goes out. But this is wages that we will get, things stored up for eternal life. But one thing I also want us to look at here is, this is a multi-person effort for what we're doing. This is not about you necessarily working by yourself. It talked about one sows and one reaps. There's multiple things to be done by everybody for the harvest to come in. So let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, starting in verse 6. Now here Paul is talking. He says, "I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor." Once again, we see here the idea that there's multiple people doing work, and their work together, the different parts coming together, is what's going to make the success, if you will. But also notice, it doesn't say that everybody's going to get paid the same for the same work. It says there in the verse 8, "Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor." This is kind of what I want us to think about today. So we're looking for wages from God. We're looking for, if you want to call it, a heavenly payout in eternity. What work are you doing? On the trip to Shreveport, one of the things I do like about the Church of God preaching site is, if you're on a long road trip, I can download some messages to the phone and listen to things. And I was listening to a message that Brother Joseph Gillenbeck did, Heart Service. I would highly recommend anyone that can listen to that to do so. But there was a section he talked about, and it gave me pause. He was talking about the parable of the talents. You know, there were people that were given talents. One was given five, one was given two, one was given one talent. That's a total of 8 talents. And in the parable, the one with five, he gained 5 more. He had 10. The one with 2 gained 2 more. So now he has 4. But the one with 1 He didn't lose his talent, but he didn't do anything with it. He just kept it. And so if you look at it from a group perspective, they started off with 8 talents, 5 plus 2 plus 1. And if you still look at it from a group perspective, at the end they had 15 talents, almost double. And kind of what Brother Joseph brought out was, what do you think the view of that man with the one talent was? Do you think he maybe went up to the other couple of folks and said, hey, how many talents did you get? Do you have right now? Well, I had my 5 and I got 5 more. Oh, great, you got 10. Well, what about you? Well, I took my 2 and I got 2 more. Oh, well, that's 14. With my 1, that's 15. We've done really well. Can we look at our spiritual work that way? To where we're looking at the average. We're looking and say, okay, 15 divided by 3, that's 5. 5 talents each on average. We've done good. We've really done good. What was the Lord's response to that when he came? Did he come in and say, okay, the 3 of y'all come in here and pile the talents on the table. Let's see who's got, oh, all 15, that's good. Y'all are good. No, what did it say there in verse 8? You're going to be given your wages individually for the work you've done. And in the parable of the talents, we had two that were rewarded and one that was rebuked. Now, he hadn't lost his talent, but he hadn't really done any work with it. In fact, what had the master of the servant said? He said, at least you could have gone and put it in the bank. Go earn some just simple interest on it. And have you all ever thought about this? Wouldn't it probably have been better kept in a bank, safer in a bank, than buried in the field? I mean, I can bury and hide something in the field, but what if somebody saw me burying something on the back of my property and said, what did he do that for? I thought I saw him put a box in the ground. I'm going to go dig that up. Huh, looky here. Here's a talent. I'm going to take it out, put the box back. And then if I'm that unprofitable servant, I go out and I dig my box up when the master returns, and guess what? That talent I thought was safe isn't there. If he had at least taken that talent and said, okay, I'm not a businessman. I really don't know how to buy and sell and trade. I'm not a salesman. I'm not good with words, but you know what? I know they've got savings account. It may not earn a lot of interest, but at least it'll be something for the Lord. So I'm going to take and do what I can. Because it sounds like if he'd at least done that, the master would have been like, all right, I appreciate that. You at least earned me something. So with that in mind, what are we doing to earn the wages from the Lord? Are we watering? Are we sowing? Are we reaping? You know, I've talked about it before, but sports fans, they go into the bleachers and they identify with the teams they cheer on. And when the team loses, they feel it. Their heart's sick. We lost. When the team wins, oh, they celebrate it. Yes, we won. But at the end of the game, when the trophies are handed out, how many fans get to take that trophy home? How many championship rings is a fan supposed to be allowed to wear? What kind of wages does that fan get? What kind of pay do they get for their assistance in the win? Or do they get anything? Just, thank you, glad you enjoyed the game. Go home. So looking at that, let's flip on over to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Second Corinthians 10, and we're going to start with verse 12. For we dare not make ourselves of the number, or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. And then dropping on down to verse 15, not boasting of things without our measure, that is, of other man's labors, but having hope when your faith is increased, that we shall be enlarged by you according to your rule abundantly, to preach the gospel in the regions beyond you, and not to boast in another man's line of things made ready to our hand. But he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord. For not he that commendeth himself is approved, but whom the Lord commendeth. So Paul here is talking about people that would like to claim success to things that maybe they really didn't have anything to do with. They just didn't. Somebody else went in and did the work in the area. And they're claiming that they have right in that area. Whereas he's saying he doesn't want to boast of other men's labors, but he's willing to do his part. And if doing that part allows him to go and preach even into other areas, he's willing to do that. And he'll take credit for what he did, but not so that he can raise himself up. Because he said it's not what he thinks about his work that's important. It's what the Lord thinks about it. The servant with the one talent. I've kept your talent. I've done well. Maybe not good, but I didn't lose it. I did what I feel like is acceptable to bring to you. And the master said, no, not acceptable. So, what can we be doing? What is the work that is available for us to do? You know, let's take football, for example. You know, there's a lot of people that are working during a football game that aren't on the field. There's a lot of folks that before the game even begins, the teams come in on their buses or whatever, and they get off the bus and they go into the training rooms, and there's people that help them stretch out. There's people that'll take tape and they'll put tape and wraps on the legs and the elbows and the ankles to strengthen them. They'll put braces on people. Do you ever see any of those out on the field? Have you ever considered about that part of what it takes to win a game? That there's a work that happens that nobody ever even will ever have any idea that that person exists, because you will never see them in public. There's other people that are, you do see, the people on the sideline. There's the people that run up and down with the water boys, as they call them. What do you think it would be for a sports team to play a game and not be able to drink any water for the hour or so that they're out there running around? Think anybody would cramp up? They would get impacted by that? You know, there's folks that on the sidelines, they fix the broken gear. Somebody is out there playing football and they have a really hard tackle and a snap breaks on their helmet or a pad flies off, and somebody has to fix that. There's somebody that's sitting there on the sideline just fixing equipment, helping to make sure all that goes well. What about the footballs? Was it a few years back, there was a, what they call it, deflate gate, I think is what it was called, when the footballs supposedly weren't aired up right and they felt like it gave one team an advantage? Do you know there's people that's their job in the game, is to keep the balls in good condition, to make sure one's ready, and if one comes off the field, they send a new one out, they check this ball, make sure it's still good? But when we think of football, what do we tend to think of? Just the 11 people on the field? We don't tend to think about all of the work that really needs to go on in the background. What about the folks that sit up in what they call the press box? If you've ever been in a stadium, there's usually a looks like a glassed-in room, and it's way up in the air. Do you know there's people that sit up there with binoculars? And they usually have headsets and radios on now. And they're watching the game from way up in the air. And they're talking down to the coaches. giving them advice. This is what we're seeing from up here. This is every time they line up, this is what we can see. I don't know if you're seeing it on the ground, but we see this. What are they trying to do? They're trying to give the team an advantage, to give them an idea of what the other side is doing. But once again, do you ever see that person? What do you think the difference in the game would be if that information didn't come down to the field? Now, how many players are on a football team? I know there's 11 that get onto the field, but how many players are actually on the team? I mean, if you drive past a high school football stadium on a Friday night in the fall, how many players do you see lined up on the sidelines? Is it just 11? No, there's some of them. I've heard of some schools, they might have 80 people out there. Now, those other players, you know, let's just take the quarterback. You can only have one quarterback on the field at a time. But that backup quarterback, do you know he has to go to every practice? He has to work out just as hard. He has to do everything he can to be ready for the time when the coach turns around and says, hey, you need to get into the game. In February of this year, in the hockey league, a rare occurrence happened. In the game of hockey, they have what they call emergency backup goalies. These are men that really, they don't play hockey for a living. They're just on a list of people that says if your first and second, and I think it's like third string backup goalie get hurt, you can call this guy and he'll drop whatever he's doing and come play goalie for you. Well, in February of this year, a hockey team actually found themselves in that predicament. They had to call their emergency backup goalie. And this is the guy, the guy's actual trade was a building operations manager, basically keeping the lights on and the wall. That's what he did for his living. Now, he did practice and play hockey. He liked it, but he hadn't played anything serious hockey for years. This guy was 42 years old. And suddenly he finds that he's about to play his first, I guess you'd call it, National Hockey League game at 42 years old. So he suits up and he goes out there. How do you think he did? Was he ready for the game? Well, he played, I want to say, a little over 28 minutes in the game, the longest that any emergency backup goalie's ever played. When he first got out there, it was the end of the second period, and there were three shots at the goal, and he missed two of them, so they scored 2 points on him, but he blocked the last one. But then in the third period, he blocked all six shots. And was actually credited the way they do their scores. And I was actually credited with the win for the team because they said if his blocking hadn't been that good, the team would have lost. Now, do you realize that for the two teams that were playing, this was actually it was to determine the winner of the conference that they were playing in? So here this man, 42 years old, suddenly called up to play in the, if you want to call it the major leagues, needing to be ready. And he's called up not in just some normal game, but in the game that's going to determine who gets to go play in a championship. He was ready for it. But what if he hadn't been paying attention and practicing? He actually had... He actually had two contracts with two of the local hockey teams to be a goalie at their practices, to help them with their practices. So he'd been practicing. He'd been trying to stay ready. What are we doing for the Lord? Are we staying ready? Are we thinking, I'm not a brother Mark Sammons. I'm not one of those big league guys. What if suddenly something happens and the Lord says, hey, I need you in the big game. Are you ready? You know, if you think about all of these people that we talked about, the ones not in the public eye, the ones out there, do you realize that they all play a part in winning that game? That if the equipment doesn't work well, the team won't be able to play well. If they can't drink the water and get the refreshments they need, they'll cramp up. They won't be able to play well. But do they all get paid the same? Does the water boy make what the quarterback makes? No. Does the water boy expect to make what the quarterback makes? Generally, no. He's just the water boy. What if the water boy went to the management of the team and said, you know what? I contribute to the win of this team just like everybody else. And I feel like I need to make as much as a quarterback. What do you think would happen? Do you think the management of the team would be like, okay, you do. You know, because if the quarterback didn't have his water and stay hydrated, he's going to cramp up. He's not going to be able to run. Maybe his arm cramps up and he can't throw. So yeah, we'll give you that. The truth of the matter is it's not. The team management will look at him and say, okay, you're not a quarterback. Because even though you help keep the quarterback hydrated and you do contribute to the game, you're not the quarterback. That's not the work you're doing. You don't put the effort out, and not to say that the water boy isn't needed, but you know, you don't put the effort out that the quarterback does. And so what I want us to consider, back to like what Joseph had kind of mentioned in his statement, are we claiming work that isn't ours? Are we, when it comes to the work of the Lord, are we really doing what we need to do and doing it well? Or are we maybe not doing as much as we should? There's all kinds of work to be done in a church. There's maintenance of the grounds. There's cleaning. There's just keeping up with the cemetery. There's mowing. There's weed eating. Who's checking the well to make sure it's still good? When a meeting starts, we all know there's a work day. There's also the cooking that has to be done, the prep before the cooking. Somebody has to buy groceries. Somebody has to think through menus. It's amazing how these things get done, but sometimes do we ever stop and consider what we can do to help in that effort? We stream our services today, and we put them up online on the internet. How does that happen? Has anybody considered the roles that are out there to be played in the church beyond preaching? Maybe beyond teaching? The disciples were gathered together once to talk about the treatment of widows. Because the Greeks had kind of said one time, you know, our widows, we don't feel like that when things are being handed out, when the care of the widows is being considered, we don't feel like ours are getting what they deserve. One thing that struck me with that story is you do not hear the disciples say, well, the families are supposed to take care of the widows. They could have responded that way. That is in the Bible, that the widows should be taken care of by families if at all possible. But instead, the disciples said, well, tell you what, we need to get people appointed to help take care of this work. So who's in charge of our ministry to the widows today? Is anybody working that ministry? What about the visiting of the sick? I realize there's restrictions today that limit some of what we can do as far as visitations. But who's taking care of that? Is it just Brother Michael's responsibility to go visit the sick and the frail? You know, sometimes I think we as Christians, we sit back and we look at the team and we say, the team's winning, the team's doing good. I'm glad to be a part of the team. And we don't realize that, you know what, we're actually sitting in the bleachers. We haven't engaged. We haven't actually went to the team captain and said, Lord, what can I do to help the team? Do you want me to go sweep the locker rooms when the game's over? I know nobody would see it, but that would help out. That way the players could go home, they get ready for the next game, they get rested up, they don't have to worry about cleaning it up. Are we considering what we do for the battle of the Lord? You know, sometimes there's value in things that don't appear to be the center of the action. We have record there with David. They went out to battle, and David had some of the men sit by the stuff, didn't he? Now, what does it mean to sit by the stuff while everybody else goes to battle? Would you be considered one of the brave ones? Wow, people are going to really hear about how brave I was to sit back here by the pile of stuff while everybody else went out and fought. So what? Why did he have people sit by the stuff? Because he didn't want somebody else to come up while everybody was at battle and steal the stuff. There was a work there. There was a need there. And when the men came back from battle, didn't David say, hey, by the way, when you're splitting the goods, don't forget, these men kept the stuff safe for you while you were out on the battlefield. Can you just sit by the stuff? Can you help in that way? Let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Starting in verse 10. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient. For you who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it. That as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which ye have. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. Now this is spoken to the Corinthians, and what Paul is saying here is, you've started. You've started, and that's good. You've said you were going to walk the way of Christ. But a year down the road, don't be in the same spot you were. A year down the road, have made progress. Be doing something. Too often, and I'm speaking for myself here, it can seem sometimes that we start wanting to do something for the Lord. And have y'all ever ran into this thing called the busyness and cares of life? Has anyone ever had that come up when you're trying to study, to pray, to do things for God? And suddenly it just seems like, I don't know where I'm going to find the time to do that. What's important? You know, I've been challenged by this personally, by the Lord, to say, you've got 24 hours in a day. You get to choose how it's divided up. You get to choose how much you sleep. You get to choose how much you work. That's a choice for all of us. We may feel like, oh, I have to work. Working is something we can say we have to do. But the question comes down to, what type of work is it that you have to do? Have you asked the Lord if you're struggling with the job to say, Lord, I need help? The job I feel like you've given me is maybe pulling me more away from service than I care for. I know I've had to pray that before. Lord, this is impacting me spiritually. And I feel like I'm not doing the work I should do that you want me to do. I want us to think about a few people and the little bit they did. Because part of what this talked about is, you know, the work that you do for the Lord doesn't have to be much. The water boy, what's he do? Takes water to the players. Goes back, fills up the bottle, and takes more water to the players. And just does that all throughout the game. Not a complicated task. But I guarantee you, one that's well appreciated by those on the field. So, do you all remember the Shunammite woman? that kept a place for Elisha to stop and rest? She's in the Bible, but all she did was notice this man of God traveling had stopped a few times, and she told her husband, let's build him a little place. Let's build him a place so he can rest. Can you build somebody a place to rest? Can you help make sure people are encouraged and refreshed in their journey? The widow woman with the small bit of oil and flour during the drought that the prophet went to. What did that woman really have to offer? If you'd have asked her that morning, she would have probably felt like, I don't have anything to offer the Lord. I'm about to cook the very last bit of food I have, and then me and my son are just going to starve to death. That's where she was at. But God came along, and what did God say? I need a cake. What little bit you have, I need you to do something with me. And if you will, there's a reward in it for you. How long did that little bit of oil and flour last? Till the drought was over. Till things were back and it was no longer needed. The lad with the loaves and the fishes. The little boy. You know, it doesn't say that anybody went and asked the crowd, did they have anything to eat? It sounds like a little boy may have overheard the people talking and said, well, I have food. I have something that I can share. The disciple says, here's this boy. He's got some loaves and fish. It's not much. Was it enough, though? It was actually more than enough, because didn't they have baskets of food left over? I wonder how many baskets of food he got to take home, back home to his mother. If they gave him, as you came here with five loaves and two fishes, now take this basket of food back to your mother. Let her know that the Lord blessed. Philip, running out into the desert. What kind of work is that? To leave the gathering of the people where a lot of stuff seems to be going and to go out all by yourself in the middle of nowhere in the desert. Is that a calling the Lord has? Do you know sometimes it is? There was a soul saved out there, wasn't there? Philip, by doing that, put up wages in heaven. Because he was willing to say, okay, Lord, this is apparently, I don't necessarily understand. I'm just going to, if you read it, it sounds like, okay, I'm out here in the desert, Lord, now what? Well, you see the chariot? Yeah, I see it come along. Go join yourself to it. What about the woman that wiped Jesus' feet with her tears and broke the expensive box of ointment and anointed him? You know, that's all we have recorded of her, but the Bible says that wherever the words read, her story would be remembered. Because she was anointing him for his death. And Jesus said, you don't understand. You will someday. You don't understand. But this woman has done a good thing. You know, sometimes we get hung up on the celebrity status of things. What makes people look good? What makes us look good? And we don't stop to think about what is it that just needs to be done. Stephen's defense of Christ. And he died for it. What do we know about Stephen before that time? Is he like one of the main apostles? He just, you know, he's been such a outstanding, stellar figure. Is he just kind of in the background till suddenly he takes a firm stand for the Lord all the way to his death? You know, we don't have a whole lot about him before that time. Cornelius, a man whose name we know about because he gave to the Lord. And it doesn't say he gave to the Lord and trumpeted it loud and told everybody and made sure everybody knew. It says he gave to the Lord, and eventually the Lord sent an angel to him and said, you have been doing well. I've noticed what you're doing for me. Even though you're a Gentile, you're out here disconnected, if you will, from the Jews, but I've got something for you. I've got a paycheck coming your way. I've been watching what you're doing, and I'm going to start setting your paycheck up so that you will get the reward for what you've done. Onesiphorus, one of the servants that was with Paul, visited Paul in prison, said he wasn't ashamed of Paul's bondage, of Paul being in prison. How many of us actually reach out to folks in prison? I mean, we have the Lockharts. Have we ever thought about sending a car? Sending a letter? Something to encourage them? Let them know that while the Lord hasn't saw fit to take you out, you're not in there by yourself, per se. Our hearts are with you. Let's consider what we're doing for the Lord. Take a good hard look at yourself. Have you asked yourself, Lord, what can I do? And ask the Lord to show you, what can I truly do for you, Lord? What's the part, big or small, public or private, that I can do so that I can put up wages for heaven? So that when I get to heaven, there will be something there. Matthew 24 and 46 says, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. You know, the day is going to come to an end. All days do eventually, except until the eternal day comes around. But when this evening light day ends, what will we have been found doing? Will we have been found doing things in a service, or we have been found simply being a good fan, cheering along, but not really having done anything to move his work forward? Y'all pray for me.